This is the Why Big Football Show on Freak FM. I'm Dave O'Grady. On tonight's show, I'll be chatting to Dundalk defender Andy Boyle about their great start to the season. I'll also have Why Big's Liam Murray about the Irish fans' trip to East Belfast to take on the Northern Ireland fans. A great relationship is born. If you'd like to contact the show, you can tweet at FRQFM or visit Freak FM on Facebook. But first on the show, I want to look at Ireland's friendly with Turkey this Sunday. I'm joined by Pete Kelly, James Carew and Neil McDonough. And to come to Neil first, are you looking forward to the game against Turkey? A lot of people say it's a meaningless friendly, but it is a friendly that players will want to make an impact for Martin O'Neill and Roy Keane. They'll want to get in the Irish squad. And most importantly, this notion of being tired at the end of the season, we'll see if that comes to the pace, because there is players in that Irish squad, the likes of James McCarthy and Seamus Coleman, that have played absolutely every game for their club, and maybe we'll only see, say, 45 minutes here, 45 minutes there. What do you make of it? Are you looking forward to it?
Yeah, I think these end of season friendlies, especially under a new manager, actually are very important. I remember back under the Trapattoni when he took over the trip to Portugal, ended up being very important with the likes of Glenn Whelan cementing a place in the side and squad for years to come. Other players didn't make that trip and as a result paid a price. So it'll be interesting to see. I think it gives the manager an awful lot of time to work with the players, develop tactics, systems, formations, what he wants to get across his ideas. And I remember Johnny Giles saying before that an international manager can never have enough time with his players. So the fact that we have four games coming up and the trip to America, I think it'll be good for Martin O'Neill to get across his ideas to the players. And it'll be interesting to see, will he try any other formations other than the 4-4-1-1, which he seems to be favouring with Ireland at the moment. But it's still early days, and I'd like to see him maybe find an answer to our left-back spot. He seems to be favouring Wilson at centre-back and playing Ward at left-back. I'm not too sure about that one. I'd like to see Wes Hoolan get more game time as well, especially just in behind the striker. So it'll be interesting to see how he plays it, but I'd like to see a 3-5-2 be tried as well.
Pete Kelly of ExtraTime.ie is also joining us on the Why Big Football Show on Freak FM. Pete, Neil there spoke about the importance of the game and the fact that players will want to make a point, they'll want to cement their place in the team. And Neil states that it's going to be interesting to see what kind of formation he wants to see, maybe 3-5-2 or, you know, mixing it up a bit. What do you think about it?
Yeah, I think because of the players that we have at our disposal, we're kind of limited in how we can approach it. You know, like Barcelona famously, their plan B was to stick with plan A because it was so good. But I mean, I don't think we have that luxury. I think that, you know, whether you go 3-5-2 or you know, or 4-4-1-1, it depends on what he wants to get out of it, whether he wants to play with wide guys or who, what they have in their mind about who is going to lead the line at the front and who's going to play close by. I think he's more or less said already, you know, if he's available and he's fit when it comes to the qualifiers, Robbie Keane is going to be the main striker. And then a lot of the big questions that have to be answered is who does he play close by him? So, like, there will be people, like Neil mentioned, he'd love to see Wesley in there. I don't know about him, to be honest myself, but that's neither here nor there. But I think that I think they're a good idea. You know, you play, it creates a kind of a club situation for that few weeks. I'm not sure that the formation matters a whole pile in the end of the day if he can get his best 11 players onto the pitch in roughly the positions that they're good at. I also think the question of guys being tired, I don't know a whole pile about that. They're professional athletes. They'll have 3 or 4 weeks full rest, the likes of Coleman and McCarthy, before they go into these games. So I think that's you know, a bit of a red herring about the fatigue, to be honest.
That's a thing, though, that we have seen in the past, where particularly under Giovanni Trapattoni, where players have been pulling out of these end-of-season friendlies left, right and centre. You know, there was talk of why the club managers hate the fact that there's these games, and it tends to be a platform for players that are not maybe getting selected with their clubs. But as we've discussed on the show the last few weeks, it's been quite different this year because the Irish players have been playing quite well for the clubs and a lot of them getting game time.
But there have, you know. I mean, for instance, like, there's so many players making the first team at Everton, for instance, and they had such a good season under Martinez. They played really, really well. And with Gibson, you know, coming back to fitness, you know, is he finally going to deliver on the potential that, you know, that he promised for so long? So there are some... good things to look forward to. I think by and large, you know, we tend to be hypercritical at times of some of the Irish players. You know, we don't have a whole pile of Messis, Iniestas and Xavis to play in the middle of the pitch. But, you know, if you get, you know, the likes of McCarthy, who's maturing as a player, and, you know, you've got some real hard workers beside them, and a hallmark of a lot of Martin O'Neill's teams, where he had some good footballers in them over the years, but he also had some real workhorses. You know, if you go back to his time at Leicester, you know, when he put in the big man whose name just escapes me for the second and went on to play with Liverpool, and that the big...
Emil Heskey.
That's the boy.
He's doing the business down, you know, in Australia, banging in the goals. Zidane-esque type Heskey. He's having a fantastic... Brilliant. Gareth Morgan would tell you all about that. Really, if you're backing a player to score a goal in Australia, it's going to be Emil Heskey.
Wow, I'm delighted that he's... I'd missed the fact that he was down there. I think he became the butt of the jest, and he was very unfairly treated by certain sections of the media. But I'll tell you what, you got 100% from every single time. And, you know, Martin O'Neill likes those type of players, and you certainly... the type of players that Roy Keane likes are the hard workers.
He does indeed. Neil, to come back to yourself, as Pete was saying, Roy Keane does like the hard workers, and that might just be the reason why we keep seeing Paul Green back in the squad, and Glenn Whelan, of course, playing a pivotal role for Stoke City, actually captain of Stoke City. Do you think people will start now getting off these guys' backs? Because we've seen quite a lot of it from a lot of Irish supporters tending to give our grafter-type players a bit of a hard time. But now that we've seen they have played, and in fairness to even Paul Green, he's done well. Mick McCarthy took him under his wing there at Ipswich and gave him some game time. Do you think Irish fans have turned a corner when it comes to criticising our players?
I'm not so sure. I can never second guess what Irish fans will think, especially when it comes to criticising players, especially players who kind of appear to be given 100% but are not the best on the ball. But I think there's always a place in a team or a squad for a player who tracks players down, gets tackles in and screens the defence the same way Whelan does and Green does. Going back to the formation, this is where I think players like Green and Whelan can fit in, just sitting in there in front of the back four. I think in modern day football, what cost us Trapattoni was that we played two in midfield all the time, and we got overran every single match. Even against the likes of Georgia at home, we were getting overran because we were playing two in there. Other teams were playing three, and this was generally to facilitate Robbie Keane, because Robbie Keane's are most likely going to get goals in the team, and the only way to get him in the team was to play 4-4-2. So it'll be interesting to see how that's why I think the 3-5-2 would be fascinating, because I do think it's a way of getting three in midfield plus also playing Robbie Keane up front with maybe Shane Long. But coming back to that point, I think we do need those sort of players. I think we need one in the team, whether it's David Moyler, whether it's Glenn Whelan, whether it's Green, someone who can get the foot in, someone who will protect the back four, and maybe allow other players like McCarthy, Andy Reid, Wes Hoolan, even Stephen Quinn, who did it at the weekend, playing just behind the front man. Players who can get on the ball and create. I'd like to see people get off the backs of the likes of McShane, Green and Whelan. But maybe the manager has a role in that too, by not... exposing them as badly as the previous manager did by playing them in a 4-4-2.
Yeah, to come to James Carew of Pogue McGall, who also joined us on the programme, we're going to be up against Turkey, and they are a tricky team. They're a good outfit. They're ranked, I think, 39th in the world behind in between Ghana and Austria. Nice little interesting sandwich there. But could this be similar to the Serbia game? And we spoke about it before on the show, James, that Martin O'Neill had come out and he said he wanted a tough game, a good challenge. This is going to be a good challenge. We are up against a tough team, and it relies on players like Green, Whelan, the likes of McShane, grafters like that, to maybe help us over the line in these friendlies.
Yeah, well, we're coming off the back of a loss, Dave, so, you know, the record books in time will say O'Neill hasn't had the greatest start, and he'll want to put that right in this game. I'd agree with what Pete was trying to say earlier, is that We don't really know what Martin O'Neill's plan is for this team or what he's going to try and do tactics wise, what kind of style of play we're going to play. We're talking about like Glenn Whelan and David Mailer possibly taking his place in the team. But, and I spoke with you before, of perhaps a midfield of Andy Reid, James McCarthy, Wes Houlihan, this kind of thing is something he's going to try, which would be a much more footballing, creative team and less about the physicality. It's kind of an Irish thing that we want the big guy in the middle. We want the Roy Keane tough guy kind of to break up play. But, you know, we have decidedly average midfielders, with no disrespect to Stoke or Hull, but are we going to see a change in style of play? It's only his third or fourth game in charge. We're coming off a loss. I think we need to learn more about O'Neill than we need to learn about the players who, let's be honest, Dave, there's no surprises in the squad. We know all about the players that are in it and the limitations. And what we don't know about is O'Neill and Keane's plans.
Yeah, that's a key point. But let me put this to you, James. Is that because he's kept it in the same fashion? It's almost like, dare I say it, it's almost like Giovanni Trapattoni hasn't left. I mean, when Martin O'Neill first took the job, there was a lot of questions around the captaincy, say, and is Robbie Keane still going to be captain? And the answer was yes, for the meantime.
It's still going to be captain.
And now we look at it, James, and it's still the same kind of team getting picked. When do you think we're going to see Martin O'Neill's plan? Or maybe he was happy with how Giovanni Trapattoni did and he kind of just wants to keep it going.
I think this is a major question, Dave, is that suddenly O'Neill and Keane have come on board and they're realising the quality is not there. Now, this was the major talking point when Trapattoni was sacked, and everybody had their reasons for wanting him gone. But the big debate was he didn't trust the players against we don't have the players. And it's what amazed me is that people are still saying we don't have the players, even though we've got the new manager. So you're right, Dave. If Giovanni Trapattoni was still in place and picked the same squad, we'd be up in arms. I'm a little disappointed, and I spoke to you before, that O'Neill hasn't given some newcomers a chance here. The likes of, I know we keep talking about Jack Grealish, but he played in the Premier League on the last day. No sight nor sound of him near the squad for these four games coming up. And I remind you, he still qualifies for England.
Well, Noel King will have something to say about that. Noel King will be happy to get him in there.
If Trapattoni was still the manager and he didn't pick Grealish, everybody would be saying he's going to go to England. And in Trapattoni's favour, the same thing was happening when Scotland were making noises about taking McCarthy back and Trapattoni capped him. So I think the buzz that came with Keane and O'Neill is gone, because people see the same players and suddenly they're questioning again, well, no matter who we have as manager, we actually don't have the players, or else we still have to see what O'Neill and Keane have planned.
Yeah, could I say there, Dave, and I understand exactly what James is saying, and I agree with quite a lot of what he's saying. I think any of the people who were out there who thought that Martin O'Neill and Roy Keane were going to do something really radical when they arrived in, were living in cloud cuckoo land, because, you know, look back through their careers, or through O'Neill's career as a manager, he hasn't done anything really, really radical anywhere. He's been very successful, but he's also been very solid and, you know, kept it going and all that type of stuff in the various different clubs. I think every single player that we could possibly consider is in that squad at the moment. But maybe, I don't understand what they're saying about Jack Grealish and that. But you know, I think they're all in there. We are not blessed with having, you know, 85 players of international calibre.
I think that you're right, Pete, but I think where the kind of underwhelmment has come in is that people are saying, why is so-and-so in this squad? That maybe O'Neill would have actually been better not picking some of the guys that are in there. As in, we know what some of them can do and what they can't do. And where's the clean sweep, Dave? You know, why not cut some guys out that we thought, that everybody said wasn't up to it? They're still there. And it's an indictment about the pool of players we have, but it's also, as you rightly said, Dave, nothing has really changed.
He might still be trying to keep people sweet and cutting down the squad eventually, but it remains to be seen. Neil, what do you make of all this? Has things changed? Does Martin O'Neill have a plan? We see the same names in there, but Pete's point is still valid, I think. Who else would you pick? I mean, we do rattle off the names like Grealish and maybe a couple of the under-21s, maybe Jeff Hendrick and that, but maybe Pete is right. Maybe there isn't the quality out there.
Well, I think it's pretty obvious that there's no players who are not in the squad who are, say, outstanding, putting their hand up and say, pick me, pick me. There's nobody like under Trapattoni will say, like Andy Reid or players like that who are should have been in the squad. Darren Gibson was an obvious one as well. So I'm not sure if I get James's point. Are we saying that we should be leaving out players and picking a smaller squad just to make a point that we have a new manager? Surely he should be giving himself as many options as possible, looking at players. And I think he probably should have one or two new players coming in. But I don't think there's anyone that you can really have a go at the manager and say he should definitely have him in the squad. It's a big squad. I think it's 30 people in the squad. So there's an awful lot of players there that he can look at. So it probably is a pity that there isn't one or two players who are new, who are coming from the under-21s that he could take a look at. But it looks like Martin O'Neill and Roy Keane have taken a look at the various players around and just thought they're either not ready or not up to it at all.
I think, sorry, Neil, just to quickly come back, I think what people are saying is when they name the squad is why are certain players in there that we thought weren't up to the standard under Trapattoni? Because they weren't. I know what you're trying to say, but perhaps O'Neill should have come in, put his stamp on it and said, I don't think this player is good enough, and not picked him. But he hasn't. He's picked all the same players, the guys we've seen before who aren't setting the world alight. And it just until we see a change of tactics, we're just not seeing any differences yet. I know it's still early days, but that's what these friendlies are about. But we just have to wait and see. But we're just not seeing
there
any changes.
There hasn't been a ruthless change. We all know Martin O'Neill does have a ruthless streak in him, but we certainly haven't seen that in relation.
Well, let's go to the nitty gritty, Dave. Why is Connor Salmon in the squad?
That's a question I'd ask as well. I mean,
Why is Simon Cox in the squad?
But who
are they going to qualify as for France? It's not replaced him, Neil. It's not even necessarily replaced him. It's don't pick him. he's picked an expanded squad for four games. Are you cut the guys out?
Pete Kelly, come in there and tell us: do we cut them as James said, or as Neil questions? We don't. There's nobody really out there. It's Martin O'Neill needs to start making decisions and not just kind of opening the book that was there at the last regime.
Sure, Dave. I think like the Connor Salmons, and he does come in for a lot of stick. And he will never give you less than 110%. He's not good enough to play at international level. I think if you're trying to put yourself in the manager's shoes for a minute, you say to yourself, I've got four games coming up. There might be a few niggly injuries. I want to cover myself so that I have six or eight guys on the bench. I need a full squad for training. I'm going to bring everybody and see what the hell's going on. So I think that's why they're in there. I think when it comes down to it, and we have 22, 24 players named for the qualifiers, you won't see Connor Salmon in there. You might see Cox because, he's got a bit about him in some instances. You won't see him in the starting 11, I would say. I think if we're going to see anything, any new players as such that we would classify as new players, it may come from Keane discovering somebody under the granny rule and bringing them in out of left field. And I wouldn't rule that out before the qualifiers. He's been quite open about it. If there's somebody who's qualified to play, I'm going to bring him in if he wants to play and if they think he's good enough. So I think, hopefully there's another a Ray Houghton and a John Aldridge lying out there in the long grass somewhere. I don't think there is. I'd love to think there was.
They're not giving us much clues, though, Pete, in that regard, because I know Martin O'Neill has been asked about it the last few press conferences and that, and he has been, yes, we're investigating all options. We're completely open. We couldn't be more open when it comes. If you're available, we'll have a look. He's been very coy about the whole thing.
Well, I think if he had a couple of players on the hook that he was trying to persuade to come in, he'd be stone daft to tell the media or anyone else that because the furore that would be over it, you know, if he had a guy who was English qualified or Scottish qualified and he was trying to, you know, smooth talk him into signing up for Ireland, if he came out and said that in the media, then he'd be stoned to have to do that because the guy probably then mightn't come or, you know, that's something like that might happen. I think he'd be daft. If you or I were the manager, we wouldn't tell us either.
That's a fair point indeed. Neil, to come to yourself, and I just want to look at some of the players on the fringes of this Irish squad, the players that this presents a huge opportunity for, because as we said, we do tend to have a lot of pullouts at this time, but maybe with the new regime and the Euro qualifiers just around the corner, it's keeping players in the squad, it's keeping players interested. But the likes of Damien Delaney, who's had a very, very good season, a solid season at Crystal Palace under Pulis. Alex Pearce at Reading has had a very good season. A couple of those lads, would you think that they'd be looking to grab this with both hands? Richie Keogh, again, we've seen him in a friendly there for Ireland. I know there was a couple of questions raised about his performance, I think, against Serbia. But having said that, another very good season. Shane Duffy, player of the year at Yeovil. I know they really struggled this year and it didn't turn out too well for them. But having said that, he'll go back to Everton full of confidence and now he's going to be playing some international football. Huge opportunity, Neil, for these guys.
Yeah, I've been impressed with Delaney any time I've seen him, even as far back as under Trapattoni, I think it was against Colombia. But he's been excellent this season in a system that probably did suit him, where he got plenty of protection. And to be honest, Pulis and Martin O'Neill wouldn't be a million miles away from each other. They both like strong defences, they both like physical players, and they both like counter-attacking football. So I could see Delaney coming into the team. The only problem is we do have an ageing centre defence, and age is not on the side of Damien Delaney. So that could be an issue. Maybe Martin O'Neill may not be too sure about partnering beside John O'Shea. Richard Dunne obviously isn't in the squad either. So it'll be interesting, will Clark get a game again? But yeah, I think there's definitely an opportunity for players who wanted that centre back, because there's no one really who's outstanding, and I'm not convinced either. Wilson looks all right at centre-back, but I do think we need him at left-back more. So I'd like to see Delaney go, but I think age is not on his side, which is it's unfortunate, and it's a bit like Wes Hoolan as well, that he'll probably get his opportunity when it's a little bit too late for him.
They are in with a chance, Dave, and we have to see if they're going to be played. I think we've already made the point that some of the usual suspects are there. I think it would be terrible if we actually saw those kind of teams picked. It's better that we use these games to give these players. I think there's a great opportunity for Jeff Hendrick, who had a storming end to the season. As you said, Quinn was excellent at the weekend, and he was actually very good when he played Spain in America last year. He got a goal there, and I was quite impressed with him. Like Neil said, like Delaney has been a kind of unsung hero this year and not mentioned in international circles at all, but he's been a Premier League regular the entire season for a club whose manager was manager of the year. So, and he obviously rates Delaney enough to pick him every week. Daryl Murphy, the jury's out on him because he had a chance with Ireland before, but he's our form striker, maybe behind Stokes. And you've touched on it already, Dave. There's been no cry-offs yet. I think Joey O'Brien had to cry off injured, but Mr. Stokes at this time last year, or perhaps it was the summer before, cried out of a series of friendlies that included a qualifier also because he was tired. So let's see if he tries that this year or anybody else, and what Roy Keane has to say about it.
Yeah, I think, Dave and James, you know, Stokes has done himself no favours over the years. And, you know, I think, you know, maybe he's, I don't know the guy from Adam, I've never met him, I've seen him playing, you know, but he has shown himself to be a bit of a head case, as we'd say. He's done himself no favours. I don't, like, he's done well for Celtic, but, you know, the level they're playing at, to be honest, it's, you couldn't say that would get him ready for international football. Delaney's a different kettle of fish. He might be 32 or 33, but he's a beast of a man, and the lads do like a big centre half like that. And he has shown himself to good stead this year in the league. So I think that, you know, he may see some game time on this, you know, but long term he's not going to play. Clark's a hell of a lot younger than any of those guys. maybe the guys, if they keep playing Wilson in the middle, maybe they see Wilson as more of a centre back than a left back, you know, and maybe they're going to go for a right foot, left foot sort of central partnership at the back and look to bring in, you know, another left back, and they may think there's one out there somewhere. Like one guy who's not on anywhere and he's fallen off the radar is young Greg Cunningham. And I'm only mentioning him because I'm biased, because he's from Galway and I know him very well, and he's over at Bristol City. And he, you know, he was at Man City as a young player, and Trapattoni brought him in. Now, he did break his leg and that kind of stuff, but maybe he'll come back in the future. He's only 22 years of age. So he's one possible left back of the future. He's not going to see any game time this summer. Fringe players, I think, you know, they have the, it's almost like tattooed on their forehead at this stage. I think that's where they're going to be, fringe players. And if any new players come in, they're going to go straight into centre stage. And I think the fringe lads are going to remain fringe lads, unfortunately for them, but I think they're going to be bit players.
Yeah, Dave, I think I'm coming across very contrarian. It's because everything we're listening to is about the World Cup, and we're not going, Dave, and we're talking about a friendly with Turkey.
We're providing
when the summer's over, we're welcoming Oman to the Viva Stadium. So make sure you get your tickets for that one, Dave, because they'll go like hotcakes. But no, it's, you know, obviously it's a sore point that for everybody that we're not going, and we want to change the whole atmosphere around the team. And I think that's the point, is that when this squad was named, people were saying the same kind of comments that they were saying at the end of the Trap regime. The kind of the buzz, as I said, is perhaps gone a little bit. The negativity is a little bit there again, because again, as I said, we're coming off another loss, and it's up to O'Neill and Keane to show us what they're going to plan for the next 2 years, and to show us that they have a plan to use these players to get us to France.
Yeah, Neil, to bring you in on this just before I move on, because I just want to look at a little bit about at Turkey, and then I'm going to be talking about the players, the Irish, how the Irish players did in the FA Cup. But as James says, there's a little bit of frustration I can sense from James there, that it seems to be when there is the press conferences, the same questions are asked, but we haven't seemed to seen progress or changes, more so maybe not necessarily progress is what we're looking for, but changes, and for Martin O'Neill to be really making his stamp on the team, because we tend to see the same personnel and all. Do you find it frustrating when the squad's announced and we still have same questions about Stephen Ireland and meetings with him and stuff like that, and we have the questions of our players not playing, the likes of Houlihan and Pilkington that haven't been selected with their team, and are they going to be the sole driving force behind this Irish team? And as James said, he brought up a good point, Neil, we're not in the World Cup, and maybe we don't have the players to be in a World Cup.
I think Trapattoni was right that we don't have the players, but he was wrong to say it.
Right.
If you're a manager, your job is not always to say the right thing. As in, it's not always to be factually right. It's your job is to improve the players, or to make the players better than the sum of their parts. And I know I mentioned Tony Pulis earlier. He didn't take over Crystal Palace earlier on in the season after the manager previously and say, look, we're bottom of the table, and that's where we deserve. He didn't. He got them playing. He got them believing. Now, Martin O'Neill needs to do that with this squad. Possibly we don't have the players, but did Greece have the players to win the European Championships? No, but they went and won it.
Mm.
So football's a funny thing like that. If you can get a dynamic going, you can get a system of playing, you can get people playing to that system, and they all believe in it, and they know what they're at, and they have a clear plan, you can get people to be stronger than the sum of their parts. So that is Martin O'Neill's job. So I know what you're saying. It is frustrating to hear, do we have the players, don't we have the players? At the end of the day, Martin O'Neill needs to get the mix right. He needs to get the balance between attack and defence. I think he needs more players who are encouraged to get on the ball without possibly trying to be Brendan Rodgers' Liverpool, because maybe we don't have the players for that sort of thing. But I do think we have a chance to play a mix between good defence and constructive going forward, and not the negative defensive stuff that we had under Trapattoni, which was so, it was just so tough to watch. It was tough even for the hardcore people who go no matter what, never mind for people who will say who like to be entertained. So it's a tough one, and it is hard to listen to the same narrative time and time again. Stephen Ireland this, we don't have the players. The truth is, there's no players out there there's a couple of lads at Watford, maybe Murray and Hoban and Smith, but there's no one really who's saying, pick me, I deserve to be in this squad.
And you know, you only have to compare us, Neil, to teams like Wales and that, who they don't have a great team, but they'll have a superstar, one or two superstars, the likes of Gareth Bale, who's playing for Real Madrid, having a formidable season, Aaron Ramsey back from injury, scoring a winner in the FA Cup. I mean, we don't have guys, and that's been a problem. And what do we need to do to get Irish players playing at the highest level?
Well, it is. You could be envious of Wales, but at the end of the day, our record of qualifying and our performances in groups has been a whole lot better. So maybe you're better off having an even spread of talent across your squad than having maybe four or five, or even with them, it's two or three top-class players. And then there's a big, massive drop with Wales after the likes of Ramsey and Bale. We don't have that. We do have players like Coleman and McCarthy who are probably cut above the rest at the moment. Then at another level, we've Shane Long, even Robbie at this stage, Wilson, Glenn Whelan, I suppose, who are decent Premiership players, but there wouldn't be transfer talk about them at the higher end clubs. It really only is off the top of my head, Coleman and McCarthy, who look like they're going to be outstanding players. With regards to what we need to do, I think it comes to the coach, and we need to, and this is going to sound a bit harsh, but we need to produce less hard-working, get-stuck-in type players, the likes of maybe Paul McShane, that sort of players, and we need to produce more and more Wes Hoolan and Andy Reid type players, and hopefully that some of them become outstanding players. But that's a long-term thing. That's not something that Martin O'Neill and Roy Keane are going to sort overnight. Their job is to get the 23 players or the 25 players as a squad that works for one goal, and they have a clear sense of purpose about them, and they know what they're at.
I think Neil might be psychic in a way there, but he was talking about Wales and Ireland. If you were, because he more or less said something that I was thinking of saying, that if you were a manager who was offered the job to manage Ireland or manage Wales, and you say, well, you've got Bale, and a few years ago they had Giggs and these guys, you'd pick Ireland because they have a much better squad of players overall. And that was the point Neil was making. I think that's very important. And, you know, and the good points he made about the coaching, and, you know, it's a long-term thing. And, you know, the success of the international team also generates the cash to be able to, you know, spend the money on the coaching at lower levels around the country. I just want to throw something else in, something out of a rumour mill I heard on the Bush Telegraph yesterday. It might be interesting, Dave, to yourself and the lads, is I heard from a very good source that Marco Tardelli is about to be appointed manager of Greece. And, you know, I'll either be proved right or an idiot in the next few days if they do that. And I also heard that the reason why Trapp is now not taken over as manager of Morocco, where he'd be more or less offered the job, is that everything has to be approved by the government out there, and the Prime Minister decided he wanted a local lad to run the team. So there's something out of left field on our former managers.
We never really got to see what Tardelli was like. Obviously, it was Trapattoni's tactics, and it would have been interesting. I know Tardelli took the match. He took one of the matches, I think it was, against Argentina. I might be wrong. But we never really got to see what he would have done. He was always just following Trapattoni's orders.
Yeah, well, he managed the Italian under-21s, was quite successful. I think he may have won a European championship with the 21s. His club career in Italy was, I forget which, was one of the Milans he managed, was pretty dreadful. But, you know, I think there would have been another. His English was worse than Trapattoni's, so that could have been a problem as well. Yeah, Inter Milan, actually. Told by Neil here that he played, it was, and I think he had a dreadful record there.
A dreadful record at Inter Milan. James, just before we move on to the FA Cup and how our players did, a quick point on this whole topic of are our players good enough, which we've seemed to roll ourselves into. Pete made a very valid point. If you had a choice to manage Wales or Ireland, despite Wales having a couple of world-class players, you'd pick Ireland.
Yeah, I think I've probably been the most negative tonight, but I think Ireland actually does have a very good first 11, and with that kind of cliched fighting spirit behind it, we are able to punch above our weight. And I made the point to you also before, Dave, is that we had no fighting spirit under Trapattoni. We had a horrible style of football, and behind it we had no guts. So an Irish team without guts is worthless. We have a good 1-11. We have a management team that the fans believe will motivate them. We just don't know yet. And the point I was trying to make earlier that Neil was kind of contesting was, if we've got a good, solid 1-11, 1-13, 14, let's put them to the forefront and let the manager show us that they mean business by perhaps leaving some of the ones that we didn't rate out. But you talk about Bale at Wales. I spoke to a diehard Everton fan who raves about Seamus Coleman, and he was saying they think they could lose Coleman as early as this summer. And I was like, I said to him, well, he's not going to go. Who would he go to? The Man United were supposedly in for him when Moyes was still there. And he said, he's not going to go to Man United because Man United are a lower ranked team than Everton. And he said, Barcelona or Real Madrid, Dave. So we do have a Gareth Bale. We have our own Gareth Bale. And as Pete said, if it was a choice between Wales and Ireland, Ireland will always push close to qualifying. So let's see if these two boys can show us they can do it.
Yeah, we'll see that, James. And with that, I just compare, you know, he might go for, I'm like yourself, don't think he will go. But if he does go anywhere, something tells me it wouldn't be for as high of a price as someone like Luke Shaw. And that's the English factor coming into play there. If you're English, it tends to...
I think the point was that they rate... the people who watch him every week rate Coleman high enough to go and play on the continent. And we haven't, an Irish player hasn't done that for an awful long time.
Yeah, it would be great to see indeed. I'd love to see more of our Irish players going on the continent. Very quickly, lads, before we leave it, Neil, to come to yourself, we had a couple of Irish involvement in the FA Cup. David Myler and Paul McShane and Stephen Quinn were a part of a very good, spirited, great Hull City team that really gave Arsenal a game right up to the end, and it just wasn't to be through an Aaron Ramsey goal. But having said that, those lads can hold their heads up high. I know McShane came off the bench. Stephen Quinn had a very solid game, although he nearly got caught out trying to maintain possession too much. I was very happy with them. Myler has had a very good season despite a lot of controversy both for and against him. He's a real character of the game, it seems.
Yeah, it was a good performance. Especially, I was very impressed with Stephen Quinn. I thought he looked for the ball at all times, and I suppose he was playing in that role where you're encouraged to get on the ball as much as possible, and you're encouraged to be as constructive as possible. But I thought he did a very decent job, and he occupied Arteta an awful lot in those first 20 minutes. And of course, I think it was him who sent over the corner for the first goal. Myler is very, I suppose he's a bit classic in this case, in Irish terms now. He's athletic, he gets about the park very well, he gets his foot in, maybe Yanazai will say a little bit too much. But yeah, I'd like to see Myler kick on a little bit in the same way that James McCarthy has kicked on, and that get on the ball, maybe a bit more constructive with it, and control the tempo a little bit more. He seems to be more athletic rather than someone who can control a game. And unfortunately, we've had plenty of those players over the years, and what we don't have is that someone like McCarthy is outstanding, and he really is going to be a mainstay for Ireland. So it's a pity that Myler hasn't become that sort of player. He looks to be more of the physical, athletic side, but he has had a good season, and he's well able for the hurly-burly nature of the Premiership at times. There's no problems there, and he's well able to look after himself, but from an Irish point of view and an international football point of view, I'd like to see him do a bit more on the controlling the game side of things. It was great to see Paul McShane back as well. He's had a rough old time with injury. There was time, especially in the right back spot, when he got on the ball and Arsenal were pressing him right into the corner, and he maybe tried to play a bit of football. If you were a Hull City fan, it might be a bit worried. But he did a decent job, and there was never an issue, really. I don't think he got caught out. So I don't think Paul McShane is going to be... he's always going to be a squad member for Ireland. He'll never let us down. But I hope we're not building a back four around him. And that's... I know that sounds a bit harsh, but that's just the reality of it.
Yeah, okay. Pete Kelly, to come to yourself. A lot of positives there in the Irish performances in that FA Cup final. And as we said, quite a character, controversial by all means. David Myler, he's still young and, well, young enough. I think he's like 26 or something now, and 27 maybe. He's getting better. He's a big physical lad for a midfield player. And then Stephen Quinn as well. Tidy, clever player, a little bit like Wes Hoolahan. Didn't get too many games this season, throughout the season, for Hull City, but still has something to offer, and it's good to see.
Yeah, I think, you know, Quinn's a busy player. He can put over some nice crosses in time. Myler is developing a reputation as being a bit of a hard nut. You know, that could count against him with referees, maybe. Managers love that. They just love a guy. And McShane, as he was saying, that guy will, you know, if they asked McShane to go out and play in his bare feet on broken glass for Ireland, he would do it. And they're the type of players that, you know, that you want in your team. The problem that they have is they give the ball away too often when they have it. They don't have anything like the passing ability or the vision, I think, that McCarthy has. Now, another guy is that if he actually develops, as you know, in the very near future, is Gibson. If he comes back, gets fit, and really wants to, because, you know, he's had a bit of a puss on him at times, then he has the physicality that Myler has and more. He's a big man, and he can also pass it, and he can get up and down box to box. So he's a real possibility if he plays to his potential. And you know, that's why Man United signed him as a kid. You know, I think he got a bit too big for himself in the trap era and decided he'd make himself unavailable. You know, O'Neill and Keane will not take that kind of stuff either. I think he realizes that, and no manager will take that. But he has the physicality, and he has the ability. Whether he has the application or not remains to be seen.
Yeah, and it's a positive as well, in the sense that for both the players at Everton and at Hull City, because they're going to both be playing Europa football next season, which means there's going to be so many games, and our players will be exposed to European football as well. So we can have no complaints about our lads getting game time, because they surely will. Very quickly, before we let you go, James, Irish players on the move. Can you see any big money transfers in? We talked about Seamus Coleman. Is there anybody else in there that you think will make a move?
No. No is the answer, Dave. I think, like, in all seriousness, we've been talking about quality, and there's two or three really outstanding players like McCarthy and Coleman. Coleman possibly is a player that a team could come in with big money and entice him away. But our Irish players tend to hover around the same kind of level, and we're always a bit disappointed when they drop down to the Championship. So, like, as long as they stay in the Premier League, it would be great if I was reading about Kevin Doyle today, that if he can get a move, and if QPR could come up, because I think Doyle has unfinished business in the Premier League. I think he threatened to be a great striker, and it hasn't worked out for him in the last couple of years. So a big money move, no. Player, we tend to get pockets of Irish players at clubs like Stoke, Hull, because they're grafting type teams, grafting type managers, grafting type players. So until we're producing the Xavis and the Messis, we're not going to get guys at the bigger teams. But we have two guys at Everton who are destined for the top, I think.
Well, I think a lot of Irish fans will, fingers crossed, cross our hearts, hope that does happen. And if you watch Everton this season, you certainly can see that, as they say, what is it? If 2/3 of the earth is covered by water, the rest is covered by James McCarthy. That's what Everton fans say. James Carew, Pete Kelly and Neil McDonough, thanks a million for joining me on the Why Big Football Show.
Times. We're online and we're in your pocket. Just search for FRQ.fm and boom! There we are. Simples.
The one club really laying the marker in the Airtricity League this year is Dundalk, currently in second place with a game in hand over leaders Shamrock Rovers. It's been a phenomenal season so far, and we're delighted to have Dundalk's Andy Boyle on the show this week. Andy, thanks a million for joining us. You guys inflicted more misery on Limerick in the league last week, but having said that, a lot of positives to take from you guys. The second half pressure and performance, I think, certainly deserved the win.
Yeah, definitely. I think first half wasn't probably our best performance of the season. We didn't really get going, to be honest with you there. And but I think second half we came out and we put in a good performance, and I think deservedly in the end we came away with the 3 points, you know.
Playing a Limerick team like that, Andy and Thomond, who are desperate for points, and their keeper Barry Ryan, I think he had a really great game, pulling off saves left, right and centre. But you guys were consistent, you stuck with your game plan. It's a serious tough test though at this stage of the season, so it must have been a huge boost to come away with a win, because a lot of teams in your position may not have gotten the win. They probably would have been held to a draw or perhaps even lost the game.
Yeah, it was great to come away with the 3 points. As you said, the keeper Ryan was made some great saves. It was really tough to get the goals, but you did get them, thank God, in the end. And it's a massive 3 points to come away with. Bouncing back from obviously the cup final, yeah, disappointing last week, and but it was a great way to show that won't affect us, you know.
You've got a tricky run of games now, a difficult local derby on the way, followed by Sligo Rovers, who've really started driving forward in the league after a pretty slow start. It's not a good time to be playing Sligo, but your fixtures are coming thick and fast, and no doubt very hard.
Yeah, they don't come much tougher than the two games you have coming up this week now. Obviously, the Loud Derby fourth, that's that. All our attention will be on that's out of the way. It's a massive game for us. The derbies are always very hard to predict. And got a tough side, hard to break down, and no doubt will give us a great game on Tuesday.
For yourself, being a defender and that, you're obviously going to be very busy. In fact, the league has been quite like that for defenders. I know there's been so much end-to-end football played this year, with the top four or five clubs being so competitive, and a couple of ones even further down are taking scalps. You must be getting a lot of praise by your teammates, because you seem to be clearing a lot of balls that seem to be raining down into the box constantly. And if you keep a score down in any game this season, there's a good chance that you guys would go on to win it.
Yeah, I think that's especially the way we play. We're very open, and we try, and if we can keep a clean sheet, we always think that we can go up here and score goals. And obviously, our jobs as defenders is to keep clean sheets. And it's a very competitive league this year. Every team comes out and gives you a good game, and if you don't get any 3 points easily in this league, they're really are tough games, and you have to fight really hard to get 3 points.
Yeah, you do indeed. Dundalk, now, you guys were defeated, as you said, Andy, in the Setanta Sports Cup final. I suppose it was quite disappointing, but having said that, the defeat, it might spur you on a little bit for the league, and it focuses your concentration a little bit more, whereas sometimes it's easier to get over a defeat than it would be to get over a win, because maybe when it's a defeat, your focus turns straight back to League of Ireland Airtricity League football.
Yeah, maybe so. It was disappointing to see, but I think we're over that now. And all, you show that now in Limerick with getting the result down there. It's just one of them things you have to put behind, and hopefully it'll make us as a team more hungrier to go on and win other trophies this year.
I always wonder, Andy, is there a danger in situations like that, that it could affect players and maybe get them to drop their heads a little bit? But you guys obviously, as you said, bounced back against Limerick. And what did Stephen Kenny say to you guys to get you back on track?
Stephen was obviously a very experienced manager. He knew that we'd be disappointed. He was disappointed himself, but it's just one of them things that obviously happens on the day. Cup finals, it's a one-off game. It's not much you can do. You're beating the margins were very small in that game, and we just had to show that we could bounce back. And this is a big week for us. Obviously, the three games were in the week. We got off to a good start with them 3 points now in Limerick, and hopefully we can go on and push on and get more good points during the week.
Indeed, it's going to be very difficult but very exciting, no doubt about that, Andy. And looking at the league table now, you're 1 point off the top with Pats and Cork close behind. What are the team's objectives this year, and have they changed now for Dundalk, considering the strong position that you're in? I know at the start of the season it could have been a case where you'd like to be up there challenging, but now it seems like you're going to hopefully go in it right till the end. Did things change due to the great start that you guys had?
No, to be honest, I don't really think that anything has really changed. I think we're just kind of taking games as they come, you know, and obviously if there's a cup game, you're looking to get through to the next round, and if it's in the league, you're just trying to pick up the next 3 points that's available. No one really changed. Obviously, we're probably coming towards the end when you evaluate where you are, and if you can push on for maybe either titles or cups, be all for that. We'd love to pick up some silverware at the end of the season, you know.
Yeah, it would be very special indeed for all the Dundalk fans as well. Do you feel the side now have progressed a lot since last season, Andy? Do you feel there's maybe a greater belief in this squad? Has many things changed in terms of the training and new approaches being brought by Stephen Kenny?
I think the training and the stuff is pretty much the same, man. You've obviously strengthened the squad. I think that's the main difference from last year. Being able to keep the kind of core of the squad from last year and then adding the players that Stephen wanted to bring in, and he thought they were going to add quality. And I think you can kind of see that here. Like, we've got it's a very strong squad we have now. When you're taking players on and off the pitch, it's not really weakness, which is a major factor, you know, I think. And got players that can come off the bench and make the difference in tight games. And it's been a good start so far, but it's only really a serious con, you know.
And that's probably one of the things, Andy, that a lot of the clubs will agree with you on that point. The fact that when you do tend to have strength and depth in the squad, you can bring the quality players on. You don't feel like you're losing a player by taking him off for that. And do you think maybe it's going to be with yourselves and some of the other teams up the top at the business end of the season, those teams like Shamrock Rovers and Cork and Pats, those that have the strength and depth in the squad, some of the teams have gone on little runs early on in the season, but then maybe tiredness might have caught up on them a little bit. But do you feel that's a key point in terms of if you want to be up there challenging, the strength and depth is a key factor?
Yeah, I think it is. It's a massive factor, to be honest with you. When you see the likes of this week, you're playing 3 games in a week, and I think we went through a run there, we played 8 games in about 20 odd days, and it's a tough going. And so you need players, like, it's not just about a starting 11 kind of thing. You need players in and around the squad that can come in and kind of make that difference and come in and do a job for you. And thankfully we have that strength and depth so far this year, and that would greatly enhance our chances, I think.
You were named in the PFAI Team of the Year last year. For yourself, what were your objectives for this season? Were you looking to build on the strong performances that you had last season?
Yeah, definitely. I think it's all about putting in the performance on the pitch. Only as good really as your last game. Thankfully last year it was a great honour to be named on that side. But I said it's gone now, it's in the past, and you need to do a kind of season in, season out to be recognised as a good player, and that's what something I'll be striving to do, you know.
Yeah, it's only going to get better. It's a good age as well. I think you're 23 now. A good age to be playing in the Airtricity League. We've seen it with a lot of up-and-coming players, and they do tend to go on to really big things when they get noticed, like you have done, particularly last season in getting that award. And for the future, Andy, would you have ambitions to maybe test yourself in England or further afield? We see a lot of League of Ireland players, they do seem to be getting noticed a lot more these days.
Yeah, well, maybe so. I guess it's not something I've thought about too much about every offer maybe came along. That'd be something I'd obviously sit down and consider, but I'm really happy where I am at the moment. I'm really enjoying the football, and I think that's the main thing, to be honest with you.
Yeah, it's good to hear that. And Richie Towell, we know he was called up by Noel King to train with the senior Ireland squad last season. Do you think that maybe League of Ireland players getting a call up under the current regime? I know Martin O'Neill kind of touted it a little bit. Or if not, how far do you think we are away from seeing a couple of League of Ireland players getting noticed and getting maybe selected for competitive Irish sides and not just friendly games?
Yeah, I'm not too sure, to be honest with you, about League of Ireland players being selected for obviously the competitive games. I'm not too sure how far away we are from that, you know. I think that the league is really competitive, and there's some great quality in the league, there's no doubt about that. But obviously, I think there's such a big pool of talent for Martin O'Neill obviously to pick from in England,
yeah,
and the Championship, even the likes of that. So I think it will be quite difficult for a League of Ireland player to play. But you can never say never, I suppose.
Exactly, and I suppose with more and more, we seem to get a lot of players, Andy, getting selected at the underage, you know, under 21s, under 19s and further,
yeah,
down. And I suppose international recognition at that level will surely, you know, ring a few alarm bells for maybe the seniors. So there is young players like yourself in the league, you probably feel that there is, you know, people from the FAI and international scouts and that at least watching you guys.
Yeah, you would like to think so. that there is people there watching the games. As I said, I think the standard, especially this year, like there's some real talent in the league. I think this year it's so far great viewing for the fans, and I think if the fans are tightening matches that they're going and they're really enjoying it. I think the level of football being played is probably a lot better. Maybe you could say in past years, and it makes for a great spectacle when they go to see, you know.
Indeed. And just before I let you go, we mentioned Richie Towell there, and you know, players that have come back to the league, and particularly for yourselves coming back from overseas, and they've, you know, plied their trade in England or Scotland or that, and they've learned different ways of and different styles of play and played with maybe a higher quality of players week in, week out. Do you feel that you guys learn from that when they come back? We've seen it a lot with Shamrock Rovers, with a couple of players coming back in there as well. Certainly a boost for up-and-coming players like yourself, I'd imagine.
Yeah, I think obviously you learn new things off some of them players that come back, the way probably a bit more professionalism and stuff that goes on over in England, and
a few cracking goals as well we have seen from Richie. It's been exciting. Andy, I wish you the very best for the season ahead. Thanks a million for joining us. It's going to be exciting, and hopefully, just hopefully, we'll see Dundalk up there when the business end rolls in and you guys will be competing for an Airtricity League title.
No problem. Thanks, Dave. Cheers for having me.
Get with the times. We're online and we're in your pocket. Just search for FRQ.FM and boom! There we are. Simples.
Joining me now is YBIG's Liam Murray, because I want to talk about the terrific fans match that you had with the Northern Ireland fans there. You were up in East Belfast last week, and I know you're looking forward to bringing them back down to Dublin at the end of the summer. It was in aid of a couple of great charities, Liam, but a lot of fun for everybody involved.
That's right, yeah. We met the Northern Ireland team over in the Ukraine last year, because we play at the Fan Fest. It's like a mini tournament for teams represent a country or club sides, so there's about 25 teams. So we got on fine with each other, so we kind of just thought now that we're heading on to the Ukraine again, that it would be nice to have a match beforehand. So they invited us up to Belfast there, and played in Dundella Park, I think the club was. Bet them 2-1 as well, which is always good. And then had a few drinks and socialised with them for a bit.
Yeah, what was it like going up there to East Belfast? You got a lot of the fans involved and all of you guys took the trip up. Did you find any hesitancy from the fans on YBIG to go up there? Or was everybody kind of just looking forward to it because you had met them before over in the Ukraine?
Yeah, no, it was grand. We didn't actually have a proper full team like that. We had to kind of just get some other players in, some lads who are based in Belfast. So literally we just met them. I think they're through the Belfast Supporters Club, so we literally just met them 10 minutes before kickoff. Got them out and got them out on the pitch. But we got some players as well that would have been in the Ukraine last year, so it was kind of a mix of the YBIG and then players that have been out in the Ukraine as well. But like the Nordies are much more, what's the word I'm looking for, much more organised than us, because they've got a full squad and team going out to the Ukraine. So that's the team we played was literally the team that will be out in the Ukraine. So it's about 20 of them going over.
Very interesting, Liam, because I know a lot of when we talk about Northern Ireland fans on the show and that kind of thing, it seems like they might not have the huge masses that, say, the Republic of Ireland fans do, but there is always a core group. You see them going to every single away game. There's a lot of qualities that YBIG supporters and the Northern Ireland, fans, they share. There's a lot of similarities.
Well, that's just it. I mean, let's be honest, there's no love lost between the both sets of fans. So it's nice to do something like this and kind of just put the hand of friendship out, you know, because in the end, it's just bunches of football fans, you know what I mean? So, you know, it's nice. That's, you know, just nice to kind of meet them and not have all the bullshit that you get with it normally, you know?
Yeah, because we sometimes see it when the masses are involved and there might be a competitive game. You do tend to get, there's always a few idiots that will always start stirring the pot and saying stupid things and, you know, not going for football matches for the right reasons. But we have a lot of people, and throughout the media, a lot of people promote YBIG and, you know, praise the lads because you are the guys that go to all the Ireland away matches, and everybody's saying, wouldn't it be great if the Irish home support would be like that? Much is the same, I suppose, for the Northern Ireland fans, the guys that travel far and wide. So it's great for two completely dedicated groups of supporters to come together like that. No doubt you're able to share experiences on trips you had far and wide.
Exactly, yeah. So it's kind of, that's the common ground. So yeah, we'll build on it, you know. So we'll be looking forward to inviting them back down to Dublin anyway. I think they're going to stay tonight as well, so we'll have to organise a good night out for them, because we weren't really that prepared for going up there this time. And then the gyro, the Italian was on, yeah. So like you couldn't even book a room and all that. So we'll probably be making an annual thing, so I'm not sure how it'll work. And we might invite a Scottish team or English team or Welsh team or even other teams. You never know. It might just build up to something else. And then we'll try and tie it in and have as much more of a charity thing as well.
Okay, yeah. So interesting, out of the home nations, Liam, you've played Northern Ireland now. I think you guys have played England before. Have you taken on Wales and Scotland yet?
Yeah, because we played them. Do you remember we had the, what was it called, the Tri-Nations Cup?
Oh, yeah, the Celtic Nations, the Curling Nations Cup, yes, that faded away.
That was, yeah, so that was literally like the first kind of fans match, maybe the second one. I broke my wrist playing against the Welsh, so
you're not going to forget that one, yeah.
Yeah, but we never actually got the chance to play the Northern Ireland fans because the Gardaí wouldn't allow it in case something happens. Like,
yeah, I think lot of them boycotted that match, I remember, because the IFA were only sending down a certain bus at certain buses at certain times or something.
Exactly, yeah. So they were, so they kind of boycotted. But I were chatting to them, I completely forgot about it. And they were like, oh, yeah, we were very eager to play that game. So, it's a little bit of a shame. So it was nice to get the game, eventually get to play them, you know.
Fantastic stuff. Well, listen, well done. Many congratulations. And as I know, the Northern Ireland Fans Association, they're promoting it. Their team press officer was talking about bringing people together and football for all. And I know they're doing a lot of work. So fair play to you guys there for playing your part on that side of things. And we look forward to hearing a lot more about future matches between Northern Ireland fans and Republic of Ireland fans. And we'll keep up to date on ybig.ie. Liam.
Yeah, that's it. So I'll probably be chatting to you after the Dublin game, so, or before it. I wouldn't do it anyway.
Liam Murray of YBIG chatting to me there on the YBIG Football Show. Well, I'm afraid we're out of time here. My thanks to all my guests. We'll do it all again next week. Remember to check out at FRQFM on Twitter and the Freak FM Facebook page for more information on the show. For myself, Dave O'Grady, have a great sporting week.